Good afternoon. You are tuned in to a Juno Afternoon here for Wednesday, the 25th of March, the year 2015. Jeff Mountain here. Today we'll get an update on Perseverance Theater's activities with Tom Robinault, Mandy Massey. He has a preview of the Pillars of America Speaker Series. We'll learn about a fundraiser for the victims of Cyclone Pam. Connor Lundgren will be here with details about this month's Poetry Slam. We'll talk to Gene Tagaban and Mandy Cole about Thursday's Choose Respect March. We'll also get an update on activities at Eagle Crest. That writer's almanac burn on Music More today on a Juno Afternoon. Strong wind is expected through the rest of this afternoon. Forecast for tonight, low temperatures around 36 degrees with rain. Tomorrow, rain with high temperatures around 47 degrees.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Mescalero Apache tribe has received funds for broadband expansion. Troy Wild with New Mexico News Connection has more.
The Mescalero Apache tribe, located in south-central New Mexico, is closer to having high-speed internet after receiving a multi-million-dollar loan from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Godfrey Njadi is a tribal member and general manager of Mescalero Apache Telecom. That's the tribe's owned and operated telephone and internet service provider. He says high-speed internet is critical for the tribe to market its main source of revenue, the Inn of the Mountain Gods Resort Casino.
We want to make sure that they have the best means of providing a marketing tool to reach the masses out in America. That's the only way you can put yourself on the map.
Mescalero Apache Telecom is receiving a $5.4 million loan from the USDA's Rural Utilities Service. It provides funding for broadband expansion in rural areas. Njadi says high-speed internet should also mean a better learning experience for students on the reservation. The action follows the Federal Communications Commission vote late last month to regulate the internet as a utility. FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler has said the goal is to reverse laws in more than 20 states that don't allow communities to start their own broadband networks and also to expand broadband access in rural areas. And Njadi says it's a move in the right direction.
Hopefully it provides the definitions that are needed to create the sustainability of a fair and equitable way of and a means to provide broadband to rural New Mexico, Indian Country, and hopefully rural America.
And Njadi says the Mescalero Apache tribe started its own phone company in the late 1990s because no private vendor would do it. I'm Troy Wild.
A Native business leader says cultural insensitivity and cultural copycats exist not only in the entertainment industry, but also in the business world. Jim Kent has this report.
If you think designer Ralph Lauren, music producer Pharrell Williams, and Oklahoma governor's daughter Christina Fallon have nothing in common, you need to think again, says Carlene Hunter.
In the Native American world, we're constantly dealing with people that want to use our images, use our designs, use our foods in the name of honoring us. Being Native American and coming from the reservation, I can tell you that it is not honoring us.
The CEO and co-founder of Native American Natural Foods met with business leaders recently and spoke about what she calls veiled racism. Hunter says the three personalities mentioned are all guilty of using Native American cultural symbols as fashion statements. But Hunter adds that she's now seeing the blatant pirating of Native American cultural images in the very industry she's a part of, natural foods. She alleges that competitive natural food companies are copying Native American natural foods images and designs, as well as misrepresenting themselves to the public as being associated with a specific tribe. Every time such misrepresentation takes place, notes Hunter, the Native American culture is being ripped off once again. Carlene Hunter says the best way to combat such veiled racism is for Native American businesses, big and small, to support one another. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
Legislation involving Indian mascots has advanced in the Colorado legislature. According to the Associated Press, the bill cleared its first committee this week after debate. Supporters want to prohibit the use of Indian mascots in public schools, while opponents say it could be costly for schools to change them. The bill creates a subcommittee to address the issue. The Shakopee Mittewakanton Sioux community announced today a campaign to improve nutrition of Native Americans nationally. The tribe has partnered with the First Nations Development Institute, the NB3 Foundation, and the University of Minnesota on the Seeds of Native Health campaign. It will include awareness programs, education, and research. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians. Colon cancer is the second leading cause of cancer death in American Indians 50 and over. For yourself, your family, and our community, get screened. Info at AmericanIndianCancer.org.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned into Juneau Afternoon here on KQO FM and KRNN FM in Juneau. First guest is Tom Robinot, here to talk about things going on at Perseverance Theater. Tom, thank you very much for coming down.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, we've got our final weekend of The Odd Couple starting tonight at 7:30. And that's an odd kind of night that we throw out on the last weekend. We always have a Wednesday night performance for people who might have missed the show and for those who might not know that the weekend's filling up, and that's happening. And that's tonight at Wednesday night, 7:30. You can find out more by calling 463-TIXS or going to our website at ptalaska.org. And that's at 7:30, so is Friday, Saturday is at 7:30, and Thursday is at 7:30. And then we have our last performance this Sunday at 4 o'clock. And we also have, as well, we have our annual travel raffle that's going on that has multiple prizes. And we've announced our season for next year as well.
All right. Yeah. Want to give us a hint?
Yeah. We're starting off with the first show with Othello, and that's Shakespeare makes his return to Perseverance Theater main stage. It's been a long time, and that's that great psychological drama that Shakespeare wrote with Othello. We have two great actors that are playing both Iago and Othello. We go on to A Night with Janis Joplin, if anybody's familiar with Forever Patsy Cline, or Always Patsy Cline, I believe is the title. This is by the same writer. And Shona Strausser will be playing the title role in A Night with Janis Joplin. After that, we have a world premiere by Alaska Native playwright Vera Starbard. And it's a world premiere. We're very excited that we could have an Alaska Native playwright have their world premiere at Perseverance Theater. After that, we go into In the Next Room, or the Vibrator Play, and it is indeed the invention of the electric vibrator. So it's a great comedy, and it's by Sarah Rule, who is this really big up-and-coming writer in American theater right now. And then we end the season with a play. It's a two-person play called Annapurna. And there's another up-and-coming playwright named Char White is his name. So that's our lineup for next year.
And when does all that start?
That all starts in September. I believe it's early September that our season starts, and we go all the way through to about, be May 24th, I think, is close to the last date. And we also have our next show up at Perseverance Theater called Seven Homeless Mammoths Wander New England, and that's up after The Odd Couple, and that starts May 1st, and that's a great contemporary comedy that has been done in a handful of theaters, and everywhere it's gone, it's been very successful, and we're hoping for the same here.
And it talks about small museums.
It does. It talks about the closing of a small museum called the Pratt Museum, and this dean is forced by the Board of Trustees to make room to close the Natural History Museum and make room for freshman dorms. And so the town kind of goes up in an uproar. She has to defend the choice. And not only does the town go crazy, but the figures in the museum start to come to life and mouth off as well. So it's a very funny, very imaginative comedy, very, very good comedy.
You're going to be doing some collaboration with people at their own city museum.
We are. Actually, we are. We just had a meeting today. You might, when you pop by the city museum, you might see a diorama made of actors that might be moving and talking to you. I mean, there might be a candlelight vigil out in the front. And there might be a little a competition that we're doing, a fun little competition about finding seven mammoths around town and being able to get a prize for that.
Sounds like a lot of things going on in Perseverance Theater.
It's a lot, yeah.
All right, Tom Robinow, thank you very much for coming down to the station.
Thank you.
Support for programming is brought to you in part by the Gold Belt Hotel in Juneau, offering renovated rooms, on-site dining, airport transportation, and Alaska Native art. More information at goldbelthotel.com.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 25th of March, 2015. A day celebrated in the Christian Church as Annunciation Day, commemorating the announcement to the Virgin Mary by the angel Gabriel that she would give birth to the Messiah. It's the birthday of Flannery O'Connor, born in Savannah, Georgia, 1925. When she was 15, her father died of lupus, the disease that would claim her life 24 years later. She was a devout Catholic. She wrote in what came to be called a Southern Gothic style with grotesque characters, most of them Protestants. Her first story, The Geranium, published in 1946, was the seed for her first novel, Wise Blood. Flannery O'Connor was a person of very definite opinions. She did not care for Kafka. She hated Carson McCullers. She said Ayn Rand makes Mickey Spillane look like Dostoevsky. She put Coca-Cola in her coffee. She loved peppermint chiffon pie. And once, for Mother's Day, she gave her mother a mule. After she was diagnosed with lupus, she came back home to the family farm in Milledgeville, Georgia, where she lived with her mother and raised peacocks, emus, ducks, and toucans until she died, age 39, in 1964. She wrote hard and fast. When asked why she wrote, she said, "Because I'm good at it." When she was asked why Southern writers have a penchant for writing about freaks, she said, "It was because we're still able to recognize one." When she was asked if she thought the universities stifled writers, she said they didn't stifle enough of them. Flannery O'Connor wrote in a letter to a friend of hers, "I'm a full-time believer in writing habits, pedestrian as it all may sound. You may be able to do without them if you have genius, but most of us only have talent, and this is simply something that has to be assisted all the time by physical and mental habits, or it dries up and blows away. I write only about 2 hours every day because that's all the energy I have, but I don't let anything interfere with those 2 hours at the same time and the same place. Sometimes I work for months and have to throw everything away, but I don't think any of that was time wasted. The fact is, if you don't sit there every day, the day would come when you won't be sitting there." It's the birthday of the agricultural scientist Norman Borlaug, born in Cresco, Iowa, 1914, sent by the Rockefeller Foundation to direct an agricultural research station in Mexico, where he bred a new strain of high-yield dwarf wheat, which enabled Mexican farmers to triple their production. Borlaug said the first essential component of social justice is adequate food for all mankind. Food is the moral right of all who are born into this world. And it's the birthday of the writer who said, "A woman without a man is like a fish without a bicycle," Gloria Steinem, born in Toledo, Ohio, 1934. Here's a poem for today by William Butler Yeats. He wishes for the cloths of heaven. "Had I the heaven's embroidered cloths, enwrought with golden and silver light, the blue and the dim and the dark cloths of night and light and the half-light, I would spread the cloths under your feet. But I, being poor, have only my dreams. I have spread my dreams under your feet. Tread softly, because you tread on my dreams." He wishes for the cloths of heaven, poem by William Butler Yeats. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. and by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's 15 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to a Juno Afternoon. A couple of reminders tonight at 7 o'clock until 9 o'clock. Folk Festival Highlights, produced by Shelley Owens, are going to be featured on Friends and Neighbors with Mike Sakiris. It's followed at 9 o'clock by Katie Bosser with Stormy Weather. Also this Saturday from 2 to 4 at Hearthside Books in the Nugget Mall, there's a book signing with Lois Lindenfeld, featuring her new book. In studio with us now is Gene Tagaman and Mandy Cole. Mandy's from Aware, and Gene Tagaman is from Juno and an actor. And Gene, where are you living now?
I'm living down in Tacoma, Washington, Reston, Washington, right next to Point Defiance Park. And it's great to be back home.
You're here to talk about the Choose Respect March, which is happening tomorrow.
That's right. We are meeting tomorrow at noon on the steps of the Capitol, and we're going to hear from Governor Walker and Mr. Tagaban, of course, and a couple of other folks, Lori Morton at CDVSA and Andy Klein from the Alaska Brewing Company, and our own, Aware's own, Britta Tonneson. And we're going to support Aware, and we're going to support women and children who have been victims of domestic and sexual violence, and we're going to just kind of get our whole community together so that we can show support and be aware of what's happening here. And my hope is that a lot of people will turn out, even if the weather isn't so great.
And what time does it all start?
Starts at noon tomorrow. And we're going to march from the Capitol steps down to Marine Park.
Gene, your face has been on a lot of television lately.
Yeah.
Speaking your mind about domestic violence.
Hey, you know, this initiative, this movement is called Alaska Men Choose Respect. And it's about, as many people may not know, that Alaska is the leading in this nation for domestic violence or violence of men against women. And so this initiative, Alaska Men Choose Respect, is to stop and end the violence against women in Alaska. And it's about getting men involved. The women have been at the forefront. They've stepped up. They've been getting the word out and advocacy and just getting that energy out there. But as men, we need to step up. We need to step forward and let our voices be heard. We need to stand not behind the women. We need to stand next to the women and sometimes even take the lead in stopping this and creating a healthier, well, there's a beautiful Alaska that we know that we can have. And so that's what this is about. It's about getting men involved in this initiative to stop the violence in Alaska.
What kind of things can be done constructively by men?
First of all, just get involved by speaking up, talking about it, talking to your youth, talking to your children, being mentors. One of the programs that I work with is called Compass. And what it is that we are training men to be mentors. Men to be mentors not only for their children in their own homes, but those mentors for young men in the communities, even when they go out hunting, when they go out fishing, when they're coaching basketball or some kind of sports, just to talk about conflict resolution, healthy communication, what it means to be a man, what it means to show and have emotions and to express healthy emotions and just to live a very respectful and not, I'm even going to take it not only respectful, but just to honor our women, honor our moms, honor our sisters, honor our grandmothers, honor our aunties and uncles and our neighbors, just to honor our women and to get involved and just to speak up. And so you can get involved in so many of those ways. And if there's other groups that are up in your community and you want to see this something done, we're the ones who are going to do it. You know, we can have these big programs, but it's the individuals that are in the communities themselves that step up and get involved are the ones who are going to make the difference.
I'm interested to know more about the Compass program. What ages are the people that you're working with?
You know, we're working with we're teaching the mentors how to be mentors, and so we're working with. So far, I've worked with kids or men between the ages of 20 to 60. and they could be even older than that. And so they could be, again, those who are working in the system as already as far as working with people. Some of them are just citizens or individuals who just want to get involved. And they don't know how to even approach or even to speak up and to talk with young men. But they want to. They want to talk with even their sons and their nephews. Or it could just, it's just a variety of people. So it's just these men. It's not only just Native men. It's all men. It doesn't matter if you're white, you're black, you're Native, or you're Asian. We're all involved with this. We're all stepping up for a healthier Alaska.
Sometimes that first step is the hardest one to make.
Absolutely. Sometimes it's just, just because it takes courage. And it takes courage to have courage. But you know what? It just hurts me deep inside. I know it hurts so many other people and our men when we see a sister who is bruised up. And it's not only the physical abuse that we see, but it's the emotional abuse that's there. And not only that, but it's the spiritual abuse that's happening. It just tears me up inside. It hurts me. And what's happening to our women is happening to us as well. And so it's and I'm glad to see that this is an initiative that, we're going to stand on the steps of the Capitol here in Juneau, and let our voices be heard. As is part of the song, "Shall not be forgotten, our grandfather's land, our voices will be heard on it." And it's time that our voices are heard as men to step up to stop the violence.
And I suppose that if you're wondering how to take that first step or what to do to get involved, you can go to the march tomorrow.
You can. And I want to thank Jean for your comments. And I also want to say that, I really believe that all people want to be safe partners and good parents. And it's not so much changing or taking steps. It's more like uncovering this part of you that connects you to everyone else. And instead of trying to hold that down, like celebrate that and just love everyone around you, love your children, love the other children in your life and the women and the people in your life that make your life whole, and being proud of that rather than trying to kind of hold yourself separate or trying to be something you think you should be. I think in the end, if we can all get in touch with that really deep part of us that wants to be connected, we will be connected. It'll be easy then.
A part of that connection, too, is with the compass. What we do is we take a look at who we are as men, who we are as human beings. Because oftentimes we lose that connection is because there's some place deep down inside of us that has been wounded, that has been hurt, that has faced that trauma as well. And so it's about just healing ourselves as well, because we all do want to have that connection somehow, some way. We want to be heard. And again, a great way to be heard or get involved is come on down to the Capitol building tomorrow at noon, and just even, you don't have to say anything. It's just about just people coming together, stepping up, and wanting to be part of something that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, you'll be able to feel the energy, and that energy will will change you and help you uncover all of those things.
If people need more information and aren't able to go to the march tomorrow, is there a phone number they could call to find out more?
Absolutely. You could call AWARE at 586-6623. And I believe there are marches like this happening all over the state tomorrow. So there will be marches in rural areas and urban, Juneau or Anchorage and Fairbanks. We're not standing alone. We're standing with a lot of people, a lot of Alaskans who really care about this. And I really look forward to hearing the governor's comments tomorrow, because I know that this is an issue that is on the minds and hearts of all Alaskans. And it's really wonderful to have recognition in the highest levels of government that we do need to make this a better life for the people in our community.
It's not only here in Alaska, too, but I had the opportunity to go to a luncheon and meet our Vice President Joe Biden. And the main message that he had was about men getting involved to stop the violence against women. And again, it's just not, it's at these higher levels that this initiative is starting to take hold and starting to have momentum. in there. And so it's just awesome, and it's awesome to be involved. And if you want to find out more information, also you can get on www.menchooserespect.org, and you can find more information on that as well.
All right, I've been talking to Mandy Cole, Deputy Director of AWARE, and Jean Tagaman, citizen activist. Anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No, just other than that, just come on down, even rain or shine, just to show your support and get involved. And if you can't make it down, just to stand up, and just even in your own household, just to sit there and just love your kids, love your children, show your son, your daughter, your nephews and nieces what it means to be a respectful, honorable human being and respecting each other.
I mean, thanks very much for coming down today.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
As a girl, I was taught the importance of respect for my family, respect for myself. Today, I see domestic violence and sexual abuse hurting our children. If you or someone you love is a victim of domestic violence or sexual assault, there is help. Asking for help changes everything.
Together, we can make a difference. Visit dps.alaska.gov/cdvsa.
It's about 29 minutes before the hour, and after the hour, and you're tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. We're also broadcast on KRNN FM. In the studio with me now is Sean Isley from Discovery Southeast here to talk about their annual banquet and fundraiser.
That's right, this Saturday at the Jack, 6 p.m.
For people who don't know, could you give me a little bit about Discovery Southeast, please?
Discovery Southeast's mission is to connect people with nature, and we're most well known for our programs in classrooms. We're in 3rd, 4th, and 5th grade classrooms in Juneau, and we send a naturalist into each classroom each season, fall, winter, and spring, and we work with the kids doing some hands-on science lessons, and then on a subsequent day, we take them out on a field trip in the gorgeous wild areas that are really accessible for our classrooms. We're pretty lucky as Junoites. And then we do a wrap-up science lesson in the classroom after the field trip. So that's the outreach that we do for every 3rd, 4th, and 5th grade classroom. I think that's really the core of what Discovery Southeast is known for, getting kids outdoors. And we have summer camps with those same kids. So we take 7 through 12-year-olds outdoors. Every day is outside during the summer, and we're running 9 weeks of summer camp this summer.
And this year, during the banquet, you're honoring a teacher.
Yeah, that's the big thing. So congratulations to Allie Smith of Auk Bay Elementary School. She's winning our first ever Discovery Award. We want to recognize all the work that local educators do to get kids outdoors. And Allie has done just wonderful lessons taking her classrooms outdoors. It's really great to see some of the work that she does, because it's very contemplative, and she takes time with the kids to let them explore and be curious. And, it's interesting. It's often some of the most simple things that are the most profound and can have the biggest impact. And just getting kids outside and teaching them to use their senses and teaching them to be comfortable outside, comfortable and curious, and have that connection with the outdoors can have a profound impact on children for the rest of their lives.
About how many kids do you serve each year?
Oh, probably 1,000 or more. We're in most of the local elementary schools, the summer camps. We have 2 sessions each of the 9 weeks, one for 7 to 9 year olds, one for 10 to 12 year olds. We started doing some after school programs at the middle school level this year to kind of build that bridge so that kids can get into recreation activities that'll bring them lifelong interests and healthy habits. And we also have programs for teachers. We're really excited to have 3 teacher expeditions this year that are awesome. One of them goes up to the ice field, and we'll be working with the Juneau Ice Field Research Program at Camp 17. One is going to be exploring the bears of Admiralty Island, and one is going to be going out to Berners Bay. It's kind of Berners Bay and the wild watersheds out the road. And all of those are fairly local things and iconic things for Juneau, whether it's bears or the glacier, and their activities or areas that teachers can take their classrooms to. And these trips teach teachers some of the natural history information that they want to know, but also how to be comfortable outdoors and how to work comfortably with student groups outdoors.
Banquet on Saturday night, what time does it start?
6 o'clock at the Jack, and we've changed the focus a little bit for our banquet and auction, and it's going to be a little bit more casual, fun event. We're doing it at the Jack. We're having tacos with actually seafood donated by Alaska Glacier Seafoods, and we're going to have a bar donated by Alaskan Brewing and Louis and K&L Distributing, and I think it's going to be a really fun time, and hopefully we'll raise a lot of proceeds for our summer camp scholarships and overall our nature studies program in schools.
What are some of the hot items on the auction block?
The highlight is a big cruise for 2 to the Sea of Cortez, generously donated by UnCruise Adventures. That's an awesome trip. It's a luxury cruise for 2, and that's the headlining item. And tons of other things, whether it's dinners that are cooked by local Junoites, lots of artworks, different outdoor trips. Maybe I think there's a trip to Pack Creek in there, and tons of stuff like that that different community businesses or community members have donated. There should be lots of fun stuff to bid on. In fact, we have the items online now, and so if people go to discoverysoutheast.org, they can get their tickets for the banquet there, and they can also start to pre-bid any of the auction items. So even if someone cannot come to the banquet but they want that luxury cruise or want to bid on some of the other items, that is available for them online at discoverysoutheast.org.
It's a banquet. Do you know what the menu is?
Tacos. I want to say, like, try to say it 5 times fast, and I can't even say it once. Fish tacos.
And again, what time does it start?
6 p.m. at the Jack, Saturday.
How can people get tickets?
DiscoverySoutheast.org.
And how much are they?
$35, and we have a special. So for $60, you get a membership and a ticket, which is $10 off the normal membership price.
Is there any way for people to donate to Discovery Southeast?
Yeah, absolutely. On discoverysoutheast.org is a membership section, but also right where the ticket purchases are, if you're interested in making a donation that'll go towards the banquet and towards the scholarships that we're raising money for, you can do that right at the ticket page at discoverysoutheast.org.
Sean Isley, thank you for coming down and talking about the Discovery Southeast auction going on this Saturday night. Anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
Thanks. Please come out, folks. It's going to be a fantastic time.
This is Bird Note. Remember the World War I movies with the rumble and crash of artillery? The doughboys in their trenches, anxiously awaiting word of the attack. And then the messenger pigeon fluttering to the lieutenant's hand with vital news. Today, messenger pigeons are called homing or racing pigeons. Pigeon fanciers, who also call themselves flyers, race specially bred homing pigeons over distances up to 600 miles. These stalwart and intelligent birds course the skies at speeds greater than 60 miles an hour. A young bird flying home to a loft in Norfolk, Virginia, earned a record by covering more than 250 miles at an average speed of more than a mile a minute, at times exceeding 70 miles an hour. How did they find their way? They draw their position from landmarks and the sun, as well as from their keen sense of smell and hearing. They're also capable of navigating using the Earth's magnetic field. However they do it, there's something deeply appealing for birds and people of finally finding your way home. To learn more about the amazing abilities of birds, find your way to birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
It's 36 minutes past the hour now, and you are tuned to Juno Afternoon. Our next guest is Rob Cadmus, who with his wife Kate went on a sailing trip around the Pacific Ocean from Juneau and back, and we came back through the Aleutian Islands. Rob, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Thank you very much, Jeff. I appreciate it.
Sounds like a fantastic trip.
It was a great trip, absolutely great trip. And on Friday night at 6 o'clock at the Silver Bow, we're going to do a presentation and just show some photos and play some music and tell you some stories about the trip. And we're particularly going to focus on one area. We'll show the whole trip, but we'll concentrate a little bit on a place called Vanuatu, which is near kind of between New Zealand, Fiji, and Australia. And that area was just hit by Cyclone Pam, which was a Category 5 cyclone, and it did an immense amount of damage. And we made a lot of friends in that area, so we're going to pass the hat and hopefully raise some funds for the relief effort there. So that's the purpose of the presentation.
What made you decide to go on this trip? It's not just going across the street or going up or down the channel.
No, it's not. It took a lot of investment. The trip itself was 3.5 years, but we also had to, you know, earn the money to pay for that trip and buy the boat and get the boat ready. So all in all, it took us, close to 6 or 7 years to make that trip possible. And we did it for the adventure of it, really. We wanted to travel, and we wanted to do it in a way that gave us the time and flexibility to see new things and meet new people. And sailing was the way we chose to do it.
I keep thinking of the movie Kon-Tiki.
We sailed right around the same areas that Kon-Tiki went through, that Thor Heyerdahl floated through. And we did that same passage where it took him 4 months. It took us 2 weeks, 22 days, so 3 weeks it took us, we had a little bit better time than he did. It took him a little bit longer, and we didn't wreck our boat at the end, but similar place, and we got to visit a lot of the islands in that neck of the woods. That's the Polynesian islands, the best thing about a sailboat is you get to choose where you go. So when we came into French Polynesia, there's hundreds of small islands scattered about, each one with a different set of people on it and a different environment, and you make your way through them as you choose, and it was quite an exciting place, for sure.
And you're having a fundraiser for the victims of Cyclone Pam.
Yeah, so Cyclone Pam, a little bit about it. It happened around March 13th, and it originated close to the islands of the Solomon Islands, which is near the equator, and it traveled south and went right over the islands of Vanuatu. There's about 60 islands in Vanuatu, and when it hit those islands, it was quite a strong Category 5 hurricane. The immediate effects of it were really unknown for a long time because the people in Vanuatu live in a very basic and traditional way. I mean, they live in thatched bamboo homes they make themselves, and they live off the land and their own gardens and off the fish out of the sea. So it took a long time for aid relief to come into the area and know what's occurred. And we know now that a large number of the population, about almost 200,000 people, are in need of homes, and those homes they're building themselves out of bamboo and such. There's quite a large number of people who are in need of urgent care in terms of food security and those sorts of things. Again, they don't have grocery stores there. So it's not like that a plane can come in and disperse the food at a grocery store or a location like that. They live off of their own gardens and off of the sea. So it's quite a challenge for those folks. And so we'll be showing some photos of our own time there and telling some stories about the very unique cultures of Vanuatu. They speak about 200 different languages in that one little country and have cultures to match. And we'll also be showing you some current pictures that we obviously didn't take about some of the damage done there.
So. And that starts on Saturday night?
Saturday night, 6 p.m. at the Silver Bow. Or sorry, Friday night, the 27th at 6 p.m. at the Silver Bow.
Sounds like an amazing adventure and a great thing that you're doing.
It was a very, very good adventure, and I really hope that we do some good for the folks in Vanuatu.
If people can't make it to the fundraiser on Friday night, is there a way they can contribute still?
Yeah. The organizations that are heading up the relief efforts are generally based in Australia and New Zealand, and the Australian Red Cross is a reputable organization, and they are doing quite a lot of effort, and so I would say go to their websites and donate directly to them.
Rob, thank you very much for coming down to the station.
All right. Thank you very much, Jeff. I appreciate it.
Aaron, you are tuned into it, Juno Afternoon. Our next guest is Connor Landrum. He's here to talk about the Wushkin the Inini Poetry Slam, which is going on this weekend. And it's a different show this time around because you're having it in Suite 907.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a little bit of a change of pace. And we're really excited to be paired with this local establishment. And it's going to be a lot of fun. And it's not only different for that, it's also different because, like with a couple of months ago, we've got a guest artist performing with us as he's traveling through town named Black Ice, and we are so excited.
Tell me about Black Ice.
Black Ice is a spoken word artist who was on 6 seasons of a Deaf Poetry Jam on HBO. Sorry about that. And he is just incredible. Like, he does a lot of social justice poetry and does a lot of very, like, socially aware work. And I've been watching his videos all week, like, you know, getting ready for his performance. Kind of like, you know, when you get really into a band just before you go to see their concert, you listen to their albums over and over again. And I am so excited. And he's going to be doing a little performance there just before the competitive part of the slam. And then he has his own performance going on the next day.
Sounds like an awesome celebration.
It's going to be a really good time. One thing about being at Suite 907 this month is that we have a slight change in our normal rules. Normal rules, like usually, it's free and anyone can come and there's no problem with it at all. It's still free. Only costs you your time. But this month, since we are going to be at Suite 907 and there will be alcohol being served, unlike normally, it's going to be 21 and over unless your guardian accompanies you. If you want to come and you're under 21, like, please do. It's just that, unfortunately, you will need to be accompanied by a guardian.
And it's free.
And it's free. Absolutely. And also, whoever wins the slam is going to be one of the opening performers for Black Ice the following night on Saturday. So we got a little bit more than our usual cash prize. There's also the chance of another performance with a nationally recognized performer.
Give me a quick picture of the poetry slam itself.
Okay, yeah, sure. So we sign up starts at 6 o'clock. And there's two parts. You've got the open mic, which we always start with, where you can come do whatever you want. You can do a poem. You can sing a song. You can do a dance. You could sew a dress if you do it within the allotted time. You can do whatever you want. And then there's a brief intermission, and then the competitive part starts, where everyone who's come to sign up for the competition, there's three rounds. First round is eight poets. Second round is half that. So whichever four poets got the highest scores go on the next round. Then the final score round is the last two highest scoring poets, and then you got one winner.
Sounds fun.
It's a lot of fun, and I love being a part of it. Every month I always look forward to it. I feel really lucky to be on the board for Woosh Canada AE, and this month I'll be hosting along with Christy Nami Erickson, and it's going to be a blast. I hope everyone can come.
And Conor Linder, thanks again for coming down. Give me the hours once again, please.
6 o'clock is when the sign-up starts, and 6:30 is when performances begin.
Anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
If you've never come down before and you're thinking about, getting involved in Woosh Canada AE, come down, check it out. If you want to, think about performing, bring one poem if you want to, and just do the open mic. You don't have to compete, but... if you're this is the first thing you're hearing about it, please come check it out. We're always ready for new people to be involved in our little community.
From what I've heard, it's a very supportive environment.
Oh yeah, absolutely. We are always looking for more people to come. We're always very encouraging. A couple of months ago, we did it down at Kindred Post, and there was a man who came and performed some beautiful poetry, and he had heard us on the radio just the day before talking about it. And he'd heard about it, and, 24 hours later, he'd written a poem, and he'd come in, and we were thrilled to see him, and I can't wait to hopefully see him again in the next one.
All right, Conor, thanks very much for coming down to Juneau.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Jeff.
Byron Berline and friends. Byron Berline and friends are going to be at the 41st Annual Alaska Folk Festival as a guest artist this year. That starts April 6th and goes through the 12th. Tickets are free, and that happens on KRN as well. In the studio with me now is Jeff Clow from Eagle Crest. Jeff, thank you for coming down.
Thanks for having me in the studio this afternoon, Jeff.
So an update on the happenings at Eagle Crest.
Yep. So Eagle Crest, as of Sunday afternoon, we've halted lift operations at the mountain. We just basically ran out of snow. So the Porcupine Chair is now closed for the season. We are keeping a small crew on. We haven't given up hope yet. If Mother Nature thinks that she'll send us that great big huge snow dump that sometimes we'll get in the spring, then we're holding out hope that maybe we can get a ptarmigan or an upper chairlift open. But at this point, we have halted lift operations, and we're kind of starting to look a little bit more towards spring and summer.
What kind of activities are going on this summer? The zip line?
Yep, the Alaska Zipline Adventures moves in this summer. We'll have some, you know, there's always people up there hiking up on the mountain. We'll be doing some trail work and trail conditioning and then kind of finalizing all the details with Porcupine Lodge. So it promises to be a busy summer. So we're all looking forward to it and starting to actually think about next season as well.
And blueberries up there ready for the picking.
Blueberries, hopefully we'll have a good blueberry season.
All right.
So, but this weekend, Jeff, I just want to, even though Eagle Crest has halted lift operations, we do have GCI Day on the mountain, and this is in support of the Southeast Alaska Food Bank. So there's red bags, and I brought you a red bag in the studio, but there's red bags that are available at any GCI location and also at Fred Meyer's, and we're doing a canned food drive. It'll be 2 to 5 on Saturday the 28th. We're going to have music by Curtis Cousins. Fat Mo's Food Truck will be there selling their famous barbecue. And we'll have extra tough races, some snow painting, face painting. And it's just going to be a great family fun afternoon up at Eagle Crest. And, again, it's in support of Southeast Alaska Food Bank. So we just like to invite everybody to bring their canned goods up, grab those red bags at Fred Meyer's or GCI, and come on up. And you can find more information at skijuno.com.
From what I understand, this lack of snow has gone through the lower 48 as well.
It has. The entire Pacific Northwest is struggling, just like we are. So many ski areas have also halted lift operations. So we aren't in the same boat, but it still doesn't make it any easier.
Jeff, is there anything you'd like to add?
Nope. Just invite everybody to come up on Saturday. Even though the lifts aren't spinning, we're still going to have a great time Saturday afternoon, and you can find out all the details at skijuno.com.
Thanks again for coming down all these weeks.
All right. Thanks, Jeff.
Support comes from the City and Borough of Juneau Public Works Department, informing residents that the recycling center will be closed Thursday, April 2nd through Wednesday, April 8th. The recycling center will reopen Thursday, April 9th.
The Juneau Unitarian Universalist Fellowship is a welcoming congregation embracing many different beliefs and invites the community to join them on Sundays at 10 a.m. at the Temple Sukkot Shalom on Cordova Street in Douglas. More information is at juuf.org. This message brought to you by the Juneau Unitarian Universalist Fellowship.
on a Juno afternoon. We'll talk with Jeremy Biggs Roberts, one of the candidates for the position of music director for the Juno Symphony. Ronnie Garnier will be here to highlight Saturday's Zippity-Doo-Dah concert. We'll talk with author Andy King about his presentation Friday at UAS. And Nancy Turney will be here with Arts Up at Writer's Almanac, Burnout Music Amore tomorrow on Juno afternoon. Tomorrow night at 7 on KTUO News, we'll hear Mudrooms for March. The theme this month is Brush with the Law. The sellers were James Nelson, Pete Griffin, Rory Watt, Pat White, Mitch Jackson, Chris McCrannon-Donk, and Brandon Demery. Coming up tomorrow night at 7 o'clock on KTUO News, Juno.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers. Theater in the Rough presents the final weekend of William Shakespeare's thrilling Life of Henry V at McPheeters Hall this Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7:30, with a closing matinee this Sunday at 2. Tickets are at the bookstores, the Jack, the Door, and at theaterintherough.org.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lebanon Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear. House Republicans have passed a 2016 budget resolution tonight that increases defense spending and cuts trillions of dollars elsewhere. As NPR's Elsa Chang explains, the budget pitted fiscal conservatives against defense hawks in the GOP caucus.
Here was the problem for House Republican leaders. One camp of Republicans wanted to see more dollars for defense, while another camp didn't want to see increased spending. In the end, House leadership was able to get enough fiscal hawks to join defense hawks and approve a budget that increases military spending by $20 billion. Now, if both the House and Senate end up agreeing on a final budget resolution, Republicans can use a procedural tool called reconciliation. It lets them pass budget-related legislation with only 51 votes in the Senate instead of the typical 60. Many Republicans are hoping to use reconciliation.